Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Like last night was a big night in the association. You had Jimmy Butler and the Heat looking to go up 2-0 on Giannis and the Bucks. Later on, you had James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and the Rockets going up against Chris Paul. And you know how badly he wanted his revenge. That was a Game 7. But what we really had last night was a gigantic serving of Mark Davis and Scott Foster. Hell yes. Last night was not a night for the players to be stars. It was a night for the refs to become instant legends. And there was no way in hell that Mark Davis and Scott Foster were going to blow their chances. They know a good opportunity when they see it. Like, they didn't put in all that time in the offseason, the preseason, and the regular season just to no-show after having to go to the bubble. You know, ref a few games, head back home. Hell no. They were there to make their presence felt. That's why you do the road work in the offseason. That's why you run all those miles. That's why you spend all that time in the weight room so you can execute the perfect blocking call. Now, you might have thought that the Heat Bucks was Butler v. Giannis, and you would be completely wrong if you thought so. I mean, sure, the Bucks did a really nice job of limiting Butler all night, but the scary thing is they limited Butler all night, and the Heat were still leading by 6 with 27 seconds left. And then if you saw it last night, all hell broke loose. There was the Giannis dunk to cut the lead to 4. And then Jimmy Butler, who frankly, well, my man appeared to go straight brain dead on this play.
Dragic into Butler. They've got a foul. They're trying to foul. Ball almost thrown away. Now is Brook Lopez. Put it in. 113-111. Oh, my goodness.
You didn't have to foul. You just had to play good defense.
8.5 left. 113-111, a 4-point swing for the Bucks.
Bucks radio. Afterwards, Butler tried to say what was going through his mind.
Tried to shoot it in their basket, obviously. I almost made it. I don't know why I threw the ball so high, like Goran could jump that high and grab it, but I saw Goran and I was thinking, you know, throw it Goran's way. Actually, it's a terrible IQ play. You should never throw the ball towards the other team's basket. I had a lapse of judgment.
Yeah, I would not say that that was merely a lapse of judgment. I would say that might have been the worst lapse of judgment ever. But then Mark Davis said, hey, step aside. I got this. Because after the Heat inbounded with a 2-point lead, Butler was fouled. He made 1 of 2 from the line. So Milwaukee at that point is down by 3. They're inbounding, and then this absolute mess happens.
Here we go. Bucks down 3, 7.7 to play. Into Korver, to Middleton. Takes the three-pointer. Got fouled! They fouled him! Oh, my. This one to tie it. Rotates it up. Got it! Timeout Miami. Bucks have tied this game.
I'm telling you, like, there is a thing in basketball whereby certain calls do not get made in the final minute of a tight basketball game. This, though, is not one of those situations because that's not a foul in the first minute of a game or the last minute of a game. A truly terrible call, and not just in the moment, but in any moment. Except Mark Davis sure as hell thought it was. And then he sent Middleton to the line to shoot 3 free throws to tie the game. And if that's all Mark Davis would have done last night, that would have been way too much already. But he wasn't done. In fact, my man was just getting warmed up. If you thought the foul that sent Middleton to the line was bad, wait until you see or hear what he's got next.
Dragic to inbound, lob in to Butler. He's in the corner. Jimmy Butler goes to work, drives, fades the shot. No good at the buzzer. We have got OT inside the bubble in Orlando. Are they calling a foul? Are they calling a foul? They've called a foul on the shot. They've ruled a foul. Did the clock go to zeros? They called a foul on a fadeaway. Where's the foul? Oh, my goodness.
I mean, truly. That was a terrible call. Like, absolutely hot garbage. You're going to call that on the final play of the game. A foul is a foul is a foul and should be called whenever it happens, but that just was not a foul. And it sure as hell is not a foul on the final play of the game. I mean, did you tune in to see the freak? Did you tune in to see playoff Jimmy? The hell you did. You tuned in to see Mark Davis, and this was his time to shine. When the clutch moments come, as Chris Paul likes to say, some people are built for it, some people shy away from it. And my man Mark Davis, he drove a Mack truck right through it. This guy's not shying away. He's not afraid of anything. In fact, he's hammering the accelerator. He is bombing towards the moment. He knows that, and he was giving you the show that you all wanted. Why would you want to see two basketball teams decide a playoff game when you can see one ref decide it, and he'll decide it both ways? Davis gave this explanation to a pool reporter. Quote, he must be allowed the space to land. And Giannis contacts him with his left hand on his torso. I felt like it affected his balance and did not allow him the space to land in a normal basketball position. As a result, I judge this to be a shooting foul. End of quote. Like, I don't even know what's worse. The call or the explanation of the call? I mean, are you kidding me with that? That was the most makeup of makeup calls ever. Ever. The late Tammy Faye Baker cannot believe how much makeup there was on that call. Hey-oh. I mean, seriously, that was terrible. That was awful. It was horrible live, and it gets worse every single time I watch it. It's a complete and total joke, and it's a terrible look for the league. At least that Fail Mary ref was seen partying in a Fresno bar one day after his disaster, but at least that guy was a replacement ref. Mark Davis isn't. Davis might as well have just shouted, I'll make up for it now. That's you, Ritt. I'll make up for it now. That was the biggest makeup of any makeup call. I mean, he may as well have just shouted out, Ike, I'll make up for it now. Come on, man. That's not what he did. Just tell the pool reporter after the game that you screwed up the first call and you want to make it right.
I'll make up for it now.
Thanks. Way to get that today, Ike. Well done. Just go to the pool reporter and own it. And not only did you have that terrible call, but then you got that really bizarre scene of Butler taking free throws with zeros on the clock and nobody allowed to be near him. So officially, he won the game after the game was already over. I mean, that's one of those games where I wish the fans had been there because I would have loved to have heard the reaction from Bucks fans at a Milwaukee home game to that second call. Actually, maybe I wouldn't have because that would have gotten really ugly. It's definitely one of those times where I wish the league announced that they were not going to fine coaches or players for any of their comments about the officiating, because you know you'd get some pretty awesome answers right about now. Instead, you get Bucks head coach Mike Budenholzer taking the highest of high roads after the game.
Well, I would say we're disappointed with the judgment, with the decision, the timing. It's a tough job. I have a lot of respect for the officials and the crew tonight. It's not an easy job, and of course, you know, we have our way of seeing things, and we're going to disagree, but we need to, you know, shift our attention to game three and get prepared for that, and, you know, understand that that's the most important thing right now.
This is a great coach. I have nothing but respect, but I would have much rather preferred a series of F-bombs than the highest of the high roads. The truth is, the Bucks are in a really bad spot now. They're down 0-2 to a Miami team that is absolutely fearless. They're trailing a Heat team that is built for this moment. There's a ton of pressure on the Bucks heading into Game 3, and the only question then is, who is going to be the bigger star? Giannis, Playoff Jimmy, or the refs? Who you got? Who do you have in that matchup? So, Bucks and Heat, and I'm here to tell you Milwaukee's got a real problem now, needing to beat them four times in five games because the Heat are not afraid. Dudes, if you're like me and pretty much every other person who was working from home, you've been staring at your gray hairs and all of your colleagues' gray hairs on video calls for months now. So what are you going to do about that? Have you thought about coloring your hair? Maybe you're freaking out about that. Yeah, well, you're not alone. Last week, I heard about Madison Reed Mister, and what caught my attention was the before and after shots of beards. Madison Reed Mister is a gray blending, natural color for your hair and your beard. And do you remember that shoe polish look? Most people are freaked out by that, and rightfully so. I mean, who wants to dump a bunch of shoe polish on their head? Yeah, well, there's none of that here. Maybe you're not even looking for a drastic change. Maybe you want a little more pepper, a little less salt, you want to change up a little bit. Whatever look you're going for, Madison Reed Mister makes it easy to find your color match right there on the website. And they deliver it right to your door. The process is quick and it's easy. You simply apply the color gel to dry hair. You apply the color activator. You wait 10 minutes. You rinse, shampoo, bam. Natural looking hair color fades gradually, so there is no commitment. just go to MadisonReedMR.com. MadisonReedMR.com. Use the code Rome. Get 10% off and free shipping on your first box of Madison Reed Mr. Best deal you can find. Once again, use the code Rome. I'm talking about Ed Reed. Ed, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm good. Jim, how's it going, man?
Good, dude. Good. Great to hear your voice. Ed, great to have you on the show. So let's get right into this. Earlier this year, Ed, you were named the chief of staff for the football program at Miami. What is that job about, and why was that something you wanted to take on?
You know what, Jim? It came out of nowhere, man, to be honest with you. I was not expecting the call at all, you know, but to be a part of my university in any capacity, you know, and still be able to do the things that I was doing, my foundation and being an analyst, and them understanding that I had multiple businesses already going on was a huge factor into that with my family and everything. But at the same time, you know, they're going to get 120% out of me when it comes to trying to help these young men. My role is still up in the air. Though I'm like a GM, I'm not able to coach on the football field, though I'm evaluating, from my perspective, the coaches and their standard, how they teach the kids, you know, how they're coaching the kids, because a lot of these kids have dreams and aspirations to go to the next level. I know how to do that. I know how to get there. I've been around a lot of great coaches. We had a great coaching staff when I was here, which was a big reason why you get Hall of Famers like myself, Reggie Wayne. You get guys like Andre Johnson, Sean Taylor, you know, Santana Moss, Clint Porters. I can name a bunch of guys that became great men. A lot of other my teammates who are doing things off the football field that are athletic directors, you know, police officers, chief lieutenants and stuff like this. You know, so I'm doing those type of things in my seat while at the same time trying to fill out what they need from me. Also evaluating the players, talking to the players, giving them a perspective on football and life when I can, you know, to try to help them to be contributing members to society and humanity, you know, at the end of the day.
We were talking to Hall of Famer Ed Reed. You know, Ed, when you lay it out like that, you mentioned Reggie Wayne. You obviously represent the U hard. It's an amazing place. You and Reggie were team, or roommates, I should say, and you guys shared a suite, though, with Santana Moss and Delvin Brown. What were those battles like in practice between the secondary and the wideouts?
Man, man, Reggie came into the University of Miami from New Orleans together, which is crazy. The battle started out the gate, you know, when we got to the room, you know, Reggie always had a football, you know, we used to have those conversations that it was a must that you know how to catch, you know, because Reggie had hands like no other. We used to get in the fights at practice. Santana probably kicked up something between Marquise or Delvin and myself. And there had times when the receivers wasn't talking to us, you know, and we weren't talking to them, you know, and this went to the room. You know, I walk in the room one day, and I'm like, what's up, Reg? And he don't say anything back. I walk in the other suite, and I'm like, what's up, Tanner? And he don't say nothing back. So I know something wrong.
Right.
So the receiver's not talking to the DBs now. But that right there was just trying to get each other on the same page to understand, like, at this point in training camp, we're not friends. We're opponents, you know, but it's competitive. That competitive fire, that hunger that we had on the field was translating over to the games to beat that championship effort, you know, and to make us the players that we were.
We're talking to Ed Reed. You know, Ed, there's so many amazing stories about your time at the U. A lot of famous stories also in the NFL. Like, case in point, Tom Brady wrote, quote, "Fine 20 on every play," end quote, in the AFC Championship. So when you hear a story like that and you hear about the impact you had on other teams, what then is your reaction? How's that make you feel?
Man, you know what, man? It's a humbling, you know, feeling. Knowing that you had that respect from players of that caliber and the work that you put in was truly appreciated, you know, and respected. I quite frankly wanted that. I wanted those guys to feel me. I wanted those guys to be looking for me, you know, and not looking at my other teammates, and hopefully my other teammates would make plays because they were so concentrated on me. You know what I'm saying? So it was an honor, man, to have that on Brady's arm, you know, because most people call him the GOAT. You know, and what he's doing, he's still doing a great job. Shout out to Tom for doing the things that he do. Really appreciate that guy because he helped me out with my son's birthday. But yeah, man, I'm putting a lot of work to try to help my team win. And, you know, for guys to be looking for me, you know, was huge, man. It was huge.
I mean, Ed, when you talk about the work you put in, there's so many different elements to your game, but I want to ask you about that work ethic. I want to ask you about the fire and the hunger. There are stories from your time at Miami when there were voluntary workouts that started at 6 a.m. Your teammates would show up at 6 a.m., but you had already been there for an hour, sweating, getting your grind in, and working out since 5 a.m. Where did that fire, where did that drive come from?
It came from my parents. It came from my parents, man. You know, my parents worked really hard. I saw my parents, you know, going from level to level. I saw my parents go from a one-bedroom apartment to a bigger one-bedroom apartment, you know, to a two-bedroom apartment, to a three-bedroom house, a four-bedroom house, you know. So I saw them constantly working. My dad used to go to work at 3 o'clock in the morning sometimes and working to 3 in the afternoon, sometimes longer, you know, just to put a roof over our heads, you know, and that, quite frankly, that's the things he used to talk to me about, you know, take care of your home first. A man should take care of his own home. A man should take care of his kids. You know, a man should handle his responsibilities, you know, and when, as you get older and you start to understand what your responsibilities are, you know, you start to surround yourself with the people that can help you through those responsibilities. That's what it's about, you know, so that hunger and that passion came from my parents, you know, that came from my parents working hard to provide for their kids, because that's what parents are supposed to do. And me as a kid was doing what kids are supposed to do, work hard in school, you know, trying to get yourself an education.
We're talking Ed Reed. We'll do so for a couple of more moments. I want to talk about Snickers in a minute, Ed, but really quickly, before the Super Bowl, you were having a conversation with Ray Lewis, Reggie Wayne, Michael Irvin, and Jimmy Johnson. At one point, Ray said, quote, "You don't understand what a Hall of Famer is until you become a Hall of Famer." Let me ask you that then. I mean, is that how it feels to you, and what's it mean to you to be a member of both the College Football Hall of Fame and the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Not many have that title that you just said. And you could throw high school Hall of Famer in that too. But
I don't want to cheat you out of that, man, Ed.
Yeah, man, it's the ultimate feeling, you know, for an individual when you do look back. You know, I don't have to look far, you know, and have that HOF on my name. Yeah, you got to put some respect on it now, you know, and I still don't get that respect. You know, in the chair I'm sitting, you know, in the chairs that I sat in, you know, but it was the ultimate, man, the ultimate feeling. When I became a Hall of Famer and saw how these older guys react to it, you know, how things kind of changed for me, you know, man, it's been a blessing. You know, it's been a true blessing. You know, I'm glad to represent the NFL in that way. I'm glad it was appreciated. I'm glad, you know, you can get your flowers now while you're here on earth, so to say, for something, a childhood game that you played, you know, with the passion, you know, and the hunger, you know, that you had as a kid, you know, and was able to display that, you know, to a lot of fans from different walks of life, man. I'll tell you one thing about the Hall of Fame week that I really enjoyed was the parade that you go to, and you got fans with jerseys from every team out there clapping for you. You know, when I experienced that, man, that was a joy like no other. I'm out there throwing footballs to kids and everything, man. So it was a blessing to get those hand claps at that moment.
That is cool. Ed Reed joining us. All right, speaking of hunger, Ed, you're working with Snickers and the Snickers Hungriest Player Program. Take your time, break that down for me. Exactly what is that all about?
Man, it's back for the second year. you know, for Snickers Hungriest Player Program, you know, and the chain was designed by Ben Baller. It's a very nice chain, man, I must say. Fans can follow Snickers Chain, hashtag Snickers Chain. But it's about a player who's displaying that hunger and making those big plays, you know, on the football field. You know, he's worked all offseason, the work that nobody really gets to see, you know, and then you get to see that person go, you know, balls to the wall on the football field on Sundays, Thursdays, Monday night, Saturdays in the playoffs, man, and really display, you know, the passion that they have, the hunger that they have for the game and help their team win.
He is a Super Bowl champion, a 9-time Pro Bowler, a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and today Ed Reed joining us courtesy of Snickers and the Snickers Hungriest Player Program. My man, Ed, great to get caught up. So good to have you on the show. Really appreciate that. Good luck. Hope you can do it again soon.
Man, anytime, Jim, man.
1-800-636-8686. All right, so things are really weird in the NBA bubble. Absolutely nothing is guaranteed, but here is a stone-cold lock, something you can always take to the bank. There was no way that Scott Foster was going to let Mark Davis upstage him last night. It'll be a cold day in hell when Scott Foster is not the most tweeted about referee in the association. Mark Davis will have to fight Scott Foster for that title, especially in a Game 7 situation and a Game 7 involving Chris Paul and James Harden. Scott Foster, reffing a CP3 Beard Game 7. Come on, are you kidding me about that? James Harden had lost 7 straight playoff games when officiated by Scott Foster. I mean, that stat is insane. Until you learn that Chris Paul had lost 8 straight playoff games that were officiated by Scott Foster. Oh, and according to Paul, Scott Foster told him before the game that he reffed the Game 7 in 08 when Paul's Hornets lost to the Spurs. Because of course he did, man. He's Scott Foster. Scott Foster knows who the star in a Game 7 is going to be. It's Scott Foster. And he made his presence known early on, like when he called a delay of game on Paul in the first half. Here's what Paul had to say about that afterwards.
It's crazy. This has been going on in the bubble, like the replays. They show the replays sometimes so that, obviously, it's an advantage if you get to see the replay and then you challenge. So, like myself and a lot of good, I dropped down and tie my shoe up to hopefully see if we see the replay. Scott Foster walked over to me and told me, Chris, you ain't got to do that. I got him sweeping up the floor. Okay, cool. So I start tying my shoe back up, and he still called the leg game. That don't make no sense. But I don't know. That's crazy. We could have won the game, but that situation, league no. Like, yeah, they going to find me. I said his name. Yeah, we already know the history. It's all bad.
Hell yeah. Scott Foster is the best. That was a Scott Foster game, and he wants all of you to know it. Except for most of that game, it wasn't. For most of the game, the star was Lou Dort. In a game that featured, like, at least 3 likely Hall of Famers on the floor and 2 more coaching, it was an undrafted rookie from Arizona State who was the biggest star. He had 30 last night, and in so doing, he joined Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant as the only players under the age of 21 to have 25 in a Game 7. Let me read that list to you one more time. Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Lou Dort. You know, the 3 guys that you think of together all the time. MJ, Kobe, Dort. Right? If I said to you, give me one name, I'll set you up with the first 2. What would you say? Here they are. Ready? MJ, Kobe. Oh, I got it. Dort. It's incredible. I mean, he really was that good. And for all the talk that he's there for his defense and that Houston would be willing to let him just shoot it, he was keeping OKC in it all night long. Meantime, you've got James Harden. James Harden's over there having a horrible night shooting it. 4 of 15 from the field, or as he himself said after the game.
Offensively, I feel like, excuse my language.
And that's how upside down that series was and how upside down the world has become. Lou Dort was shooting out the lights and James Harden could not buy a basket. Harden wasn't even the best former Sun Devil on the floor last night. And then you get the final minute of the game, right? It went from 2 NBA teams with serious professionals to a couple of Division III college basketball teams flopping all over the place. Everybody was looking to take a charge on everybody. Bodies were hitting the floor left and right. I mean, there have been some weird-ass basketball in the bubble the last 2 days, and the final 90 seconds of that game last night might have been the strangest of all. You had P.J. Tucker giving the Rockets a one-point lead with 1:25 left to go. Then on a night where Harden could not buy a bucket, could not score the ball, he makes the biggest defensive play of the game and of the entire season.
Paul threw it away. Westbrook with a deflection. Poked it right back to Gilgeous-Alexander. He finds Dort, shoots for three, blocked by Harden. Jordan picks it back up, tried to throw it back off of James, and it went out of bounds with 5/10 of a second to go.
Rockets radio. That was an absolutely perfect closeout and block. All ball, none of the body. I mean, was that the beard or was that the worm out there? Harden executed that flawlessly. I mean, perfection when they had to have it most. And then he let rip with a massive yell of mother bleeper when he was done. So not only did he nail the series-winning block, he chased it with the classic dodgeball split jump to make sure that Dort couldn't throw it off him out of bounds. Outstanding. I mean, James Harden is taking so much heat for his defense, makes the play of the year. And it's a good reminder of that fact, right? You know, this whole notion that this guy won't play defense, this guy doesn't play defense, this guy's a gigantic liability on defense. He led the league in steals this year. He was sixth in deflections, and in the biggest moment of the season, he was there to bail them out and save them. And then Scott Foster jumped in, because there was no way that Scott Foster was going to let James Harden upstage him. Nope. The refs ruled that Dort did not establish himself in bounds before catching the block shot. So it was Houston's ball. The Rockets inbound. Robert Covington is fouled. He made one or two free throws, so OKC still had a chance. And then that's where it got even more bizarre. OKC is about to inbound, down by two, when this happened.
1.1 to go in game seven.
Watch Gallinari on the curl towards the basket.
They hand it to Gilgeous-Alexander, looking to get it in, looking to get it in, looking to get it in. They do have another timeout. Their final timeout, which they will take as they could not get the ball inbounded. Did they just call it away for the play foul?
Well, Mike D'Antoni is saying you got to be kidding me.
Foul prior to the timeout called on James Harden.
Yes, they did.
Oh, my God. They just called it away from the play foul.
My man just went with the oh my God blast. But if not then when? I mean, I'm not exactly sure what happened there. That's Rockets Radio. I'm not sure what happened there. You got one ref calling a foul. You have another ref calling a timeout. And by the way, if you thought the fouls in the Bucks Heat game were soft, the alleged foul on the inbounds was maybe the softest thing ever. I mean, holy crap. I don't know what got into the refs last night, but they were having themselves a night. And now it's Foster time. Some men are built for the moment, and some are not. Scott Foster is most definitely built for the moment. And when there isn't a moment, he'll create a moment just for himself. So ultimately, the refs decide that the foul came before the timeout call. And because it was before the ball was inbounded, OKC would take a technical free throw and then inbound once again. So now they've gone from needing two to tie it to making a free throw, and two will win it. Except they missed the free throw, so they're still down by two. And then came OKC's final attempt.
Here we go. Gilgeous-Alexander looking to get it in. Comes into Adams, broken up by Westbrook. Picked up by Tucker, and the Rockets win the game. They have beaten the Oklahoma City Thunder, and they're moving on to face the Lakers in the Western Conference semifinals.
I mean, that's it? First of all, I kept waiting for about 5 minutes after the buzzer to make sure that Scott Foster was not going to wave it all off and bring everybody back onto the court. But was that really the way that game ended? Really the end of that game? And if that was the end of the game, the hell was that? I mean, I know that was great defense by Houston on the inbounds, but we waited all of that time for an inbounds pass that ultimately went out to a busted up Steven Adams out by the three-point line, running away from the basket. Again, say what you will about this guy, but where was Chris Paul down the stretch? That is a guy who's doing a lot of talking about clutch moments and the notion that, quote, some people are built for it. What the hell was he doing down the stretch? Where was he? All right, I will finish that thought. We've got open phones in hour number two. 1-800-636-8686. It's all about the officials today. So, did you maybe go a little too hard this weekend? I got something that can help you out. Goodies Hangover Powder. What an amazing product. I'm talking about hangover pain relief at the speed of powder. Fast pain relief with a boost of alertness. I'm talking about a temporary relief from aches and pains, which are due to the hangover, the headache, the muscle aches. I'm talking about a product that's so amazing. It helps to restore mental alertness when you're experiencing fatigue or drowsiness associated with a hangover. Goody's Hangover Powder. It is the first hangover offering from an analgesics brand. And it comes in tasty berry citrus boost flavor. And it's easy to find. It's available on Amazon, in Walmart, and at your local convenience store. You see, Goody's understands that you can't afford to let a hangover slow you down. And for a hangover that's really tough, you need real medicine. Goody's Hangover is more than the natural supplements that you've seen before for treating hangovers. With a history rooted in analgesics and putting an end to tough pain, Goody's Hangover has the right formula to stop pain fast and provide a boost of alertness. Now you can have that fun night without worrying about the next morning. Goody's Hangover. Real medicine for real hangovers. Fast relief with a boost of alertness. Goody's Hangover Powder. Why don't we double back to a topic from yesterday? Let's talk some baseball. Now, if you missed the show yesterday, you missed me laying out the ultimate huffing and puffing, hold me back, bro. Totally stupid, dangerous, even life-threatening, the red-ass drama between the Yankees and the Rays. These two teams have an ugly, ugly history, a dumb history of throwing at each other, and it did reach its peak on Tuesday when Yanks closer Aroldis Chapman threw at two batters and then threw one right over the head of Mike Brasso, 101 miles per hour, before striking him out and then staring him all the way back to the dugout. As you might imagine, at that point, the dugout's emptied. So the night ended with Rays skipper Kevin Cash essentially threatening the Yankees when he said, quote, I've got a stable full of guys that throw 98.
I got a whole damn stable full of guys that throw 98 miles an hour.
My bad. A damn stable of guys who throw 98. Aaron Boone, his counterpart, called that comment from Cash, quote, scary and not right at all.
That's a pretty scary comment. I don't think that's right at all.
All right, since neither the teams nor the umpires could handle that situation, Major League Baseball steps in and it suspends Cash and Boone for yesterday's game. Chapman gets put in the 3-day penalty box. So the only guy in the middle of Tuesday's fiasco who got to suit up for Wednesday's finale is the same guy who saw his life flash right before his eyes at 101 miles per hour. And that guy is Mike Brasso. In his very first at bat, in the top of the first yesterday, Mike Brasso went Mike Brasso.
Mike Brasso was thrown at in his head yesterday at a 101 mile an hour fastball by Aroldis Chapman, and now digs in.
We'll swing in another fly ball deep in the air to left field. Gardner turns and looks, and that's how you answer it. A two-run homer for Mike Brasso. 4-0 Rays in the first.
Boy, oh boy, that has got to feel really, really good.
I was going to say, I bet that felt pretty damn good. I don't know what's more impressive, going yard in your very next at bat, less than 24 hours after a reliever tried to turn you into a Pez dispenser, or somehow getting 360 feet around the bases while dragging a big brass set all over the infield. I'm going to say tie for first. I mean, there's putting something behind you, and then there's that. That dude was a millimeter away from leaving the Bronx in a pine box Tuesday night. And then he shows up the very next day in his first at bat since and turns one around 420 feet. But Brasso was not done, because revenge is not a dish best served cold. Revenge is a dish best served twice.
There's a swing and a fly ball to right center field and fairly deep. Back at it is Hicks to the wall. It's a two-homer game. Mike Brasso goes oppo. His second home run tonight, his fifth home run of the season, 5-0 Tampa Bay.
Tell you what, 24 hours ago, I wonder how many Yankee fans had really heard about Mike Brasso. He may never let them forget about him now.
Rays radio. So, two at-bats, two dongs, two tape measure middle fingers to the Yanks, who all but threatened his life the night before. In other words, police this. What an amazing showing from a guy. And what a moment for the Rays. Even though there is no crying in baseball or really at work at all, acting manager Matt Quatrello said that there were a bunch of guys who broke that rule last night.
It was emotional, you know. I mean, a lot of us had tears in our eyes, you know. Something special moment for him, you know, he'll never forget. It just goes to show you the willpower that that guy has to move on from what happened yesterday, put it behind him, and just go play his game.
That's a great point. Tremendous willpower. Show up like that and play his game after nearly getting domed. Like, who needs that stable of pitchers who can run it up there at 98 when you've got Mike Brosseau? His two-dinger, three RBI night helped his team win 5-2. And that is some serious ownage right there. The Rays have got that proverbial beachfront real estate in the Yankees' head because their head-to-head matchups are over now, and the Rays went 8-2 in those 10 games against the Yanks. And in the season series, Brosseau hit 500, left the yard three times, knocked in seven runs. Over half the Yankees' losses this year have come against Tampa Bay. And now their necks are craned, looking up at the Rays, trailing in the East by 4.5 with 25 to play. So, you know, cash, that was kind of a dumb quote that he had, right? But that might not have been the dumbest quote of the week. Because then you had Brett Gardner talking about where that leaves them. After the loss, Gardner said, quote, "The Rays have obviously played really well against us. They've had our number to this point. And we really haven't been able to figure them out. So the hope is we'll see those guys again in October." Wrong answer, bro. You sure as hell do not hope you see them in October, Brett. The Rays are the last group that you want to run into in October. If you have anything to do with the Yankees, what do you mean you hope you see them in October? The hell you do, Brett. That's the last team you want to see. You hope some other team can do what your team couldn't do, Brett, which is beat them three times so you don't have to. Because you can't, clearly. Or at least you couldn't. Not in the 10 games that you played head-to-head this year. And in a ballpark known for its monuments and bronze statues of all-time greats, the Yankees really should consider making room for one of their new owner. Go ahead, drop another statue out there. Tampa Bay Rays infielder Mike Brosseau, your new owner. Just don't forget the giant brass set when you're creating that damn thing of him doing the damn thing. I mean, that was like poetic justice at its finest. The only thing that would have made that even better is if the ball from one of his moonshots went out of the stadium altogether into the parking lot and landed on Chapman's front windshield. And all you diehards, do not take offense, but there is no NFL fan base that is more primed and more pumped to explode coming out of those blocks than the loyal Pirates who donned creamsicle unis for decades. I'm talking about the Tampa Bay Bucks fan base. Those Pirates will be out in force. Swords sharpened, cannons loaded when their squad heads to New Orleans next Sunday to take on their hated rivals. Now again, make this clear. This is not a slight to any of you across the country. I'm not saying they've got the best fans. I'm saying they've got the most hype fans because it's been a long time since that franchise meant anything at all. Like, I know you love your team. I know you love ball. Just understand the Bucks fans have never, ever had an offseason like this. Put yourself in their boots for 1 second. You go from horrible football and not winning a playoff game since Chunk Gruden ripped the Lombardi back in 02 for you, to now becoming the most talked about team in the NFL after TB43 decided to take his talents to Tampa. I mean, you want to talk about opposite ends of the sword. Hey, Pirate fans?
Hey-o.
Take it all in. Take it all in, Bucks fan, because I'm not sure it's going to get any better than this. Take it in, enjoy it, because the good news just keeps coming. And you deserve it, and you got some more of it yesterday. You got some more good news in the form of Leonard Fournette. Cleared waivers after being cut by the Jags. And this dude was shopping your uni on him and posting it on Twitter. Yes, the fourth pick overall in 2017 is now riding shotgun with Johnny Bleeping Foxborough in Tampa for 2020. And yes, haters, I actually like this a lot more than a lot of you do. I know his time in Jacksonville did not end well, but Jags fan, and you know I love you. You know no one reps you more than I do on a national basis. But no offense, This guy was destined for failure there. He put up numbers there, but he was still destined to fail there. I mean, hell, Barry Sanders himself would have struggled to succeed in the same circumstances in Jacksonville. Like I said yesterday, situations matter. Situations matter, and yours for Leonard was, well, I mean, you might look at that 3.9 yards per his rookie season as a failure. I don't. This guy went for over 1,000 yards and had Blake Bortles as his quarterback. A below average line on top of that, and not even one legitimate receiving threat. And he still gets his. Then in 2018, he gets hurt, and he had much of the same problem around him, most notably Blake Bortles. Last season, though, a legend named Beowulf Minshew comes in, and Fournette's numbers were much better. In fact, he had one of his best years ever last year. Ran for over 1,100 yards and actually caught 76 passes out of the backfield. So for many of you who've kind of pegged this guy as a one-trick pony, catching 76 passes makes that narrative a little bit off touch. Bottom line, what I'm saying is I think this cat is a lot better than many of you think he is. And I think in this situation, one that he wants, believe me, they were not the only ones who wanted him. The Patriots also reportedly wanted him. This is a great fit for him. Now for the entire offense, Tampa fan, the way I look at it, nationally, aside from your line, which should be fine, there are a lot of people who had two legitimate questions as of yesterday. Who is going to be the third wide out there, and what is that backfield going to look like? The first question, not so much for me to answer. You've got three stud tight ends that have got to get on the field. So the third wideout, that might be moot. That might be a moot point altogether. As for the backfield, yes, Ronald Jones has looked good in camp, but camp versus game is a big difference. And with Fournette, the running back position is no longer a question mark, but it's another strength. So Tampa, what I'm saying is 2020 looks really good, really good. And as for Brady himself, you could argue about whether or not he made the right decision to leave New England. I get that conversation. But as far as where he decided to play, once he decided to leave, that old dude nailed it. Gramps is living in luxury, and people are now following, and they want to be there with him. In other words, lake life is nice. Am I right, Tommy?
Let's go! Let's go, Lake!
Man, imagine being Tom Brady right about now. And you go from the grumpy mumbler to Bruce Arians, who's all energy and all positivity. And you've got talent and weapons all around you. Brady has never had a deeper collection of talent around him, ever. No, I'm not saying this offense is going to be better than the one with prime Randy running deep. I'm saying depth-wise, this team is deeper than it's ever been. Deeper than he's ever had weapons to work with. Like Mike Evans, elite. Chris Godwin, elite. Gronk. OJ Howard, talented. And do not sleep on Cameron Brait. Do not forget about Cameron Brait. Or Mark Mota. And on top of all that, you're going to mix in Leonard Fournette. And he'll give you a real good 1-2 punch with Jones. Oh, and Leonard, that shop job picture you did, only one problem. 27 actually belongs to Ronald. But Tampa fan, I don't need to say it, but I will for you. Life is good. You're in a good spot. Pats fan, think about this for a minute. The same day that Tom is celebrating Fournette, that mumbler is dodging accountability questions for his recent acquisitions. I don't know, Hood. I mean, you are the GOAT. You do have a fistful. But some of the stuff you can't just dismiss. Like, we saw you cut bait on Mohamed Sanu yesterday. And yes, I will admit, when you brought him in, I thought that was a really good idea. But it's the same Sanu who you gave up a second-round pick for last October, and now he's gone. So what do you have to say to yourself or for yourself? Mumble, mumble. Hey, radio man, shut your mouth. Ron to the opener. Nobody's bigger than the team. Hey, Hood. I mean, honestly, you might be the GOAT. I'm not denying that. But, dude, you have made some head-scratching personnel decisions over the years. I mean, no. The Sanu decision was not as bad as trading Chandler Jones, but it's not a good look either, mumbler. I'm still in awe of the fact that this guy did trade Chandler Jones. To this day, that's mind-boggling to me. For instance, you might say, hey, Rome, this guy can do whatever the hell he wants. He's Bill Belichick. That's fine. He's the GOAT. Right, that's fine too. But he also traded Chandler Jones. I mean, you couldn't use one of this generation's best pass rushers right about now, Hood? Yeah, I don't know, Tommy. You might have made the right decision, my man. Time will tell, but you are freaking loaded with weapons all across the field, and now you have yourself another one in Fournette. Nice ad. Very nice ad. Tommy, I'm being real right now. I really honestly think that the only thing that can stop that offense is, well, your age. Or one of your players gets caught up in some party somewhere and can't go when they need him most.
I'm trying to get laid.
You're trying to get laid?
Yeah.
So why are you on the Gronk cruise?
To sleep with Gronk.
But you understand that's tough. That's going to be tough.
It might be tough because there's like way hotter chicks than me, but I'm hoping I'm a little bit more freaky than them.
There may be hotter chicks than me, but nobody more drunk. And by the way, I'm a freak. I don't know how that ended up for her or him, or if nothing became of that. I really don't know. I can say this, though, Tampa fan and Tommy. 2020, the season, cannot get here quickly enough. The only thing better would be to bring back the creamsicles and shop one of those on Leonard. Even if it is Ronald's number. I mean, why would I talk about anything other than Tampa Bay sports today? Tampa sports.
Good night.